I'd like to begin with a couple of editorial comments. One is that it would be really helpful to have someone to serve as a VANA during the time of the opening. It's very hard to both lead the opening and also to write things on the board. And if any of you see something like that is happening and want to volunteer to do that, good penmanship helps, but bad penmanship still works if you're willing to do that. The rest of us can muddle along. Secondly, I understand that there is a YouTube video out there that shows a young man who explains the whole of the Bible in 9 minutes, and some of you are beginning to get jealous about that. God said in Exodus, "I am who I am, and unfortunately, so am I." Slow is the way we will go because there's a lot to talk about. And thirdly, Barbara and I had a little bit of time together yesterday at a restaurant, and at the restaurant they put something on the table, and when there's something on the table, then I probably read it. And I read in here something I did not know, and that is that there is a tradition, this is what they say, you trust things like this, right? They said there's a tradition in weddings in Turkey. It is traditional for the bridegroom to promise the bride always to provide coffee for her. And if he doesn't do it, it's grounds for divorce. Yeah, that's good though. You got to admit that's good. I set out 2 AA batteries so that the clock would have a battery in it. I think it actually takes a C battery, but in any event, I left it all at home. So, if those of you who keep track of time would give me a heads up, not at the time that we normally end, but 10 minutes before that, if you would give me some kind of a signal, right? Okay. Now, I want to do a very quick review of where we were last time. There was a burning bush, right? What if Moses had not gone to see what was going on? What would have happened if Moses had not gone to see why is this bush burning and not burned up? What would have happened? He would have done something else, and Moses would not have been the person he did it with. I believe that. Whatever he was going to do, he would have done it some other way. I think human beings have free will to respond to or not to respond to God's calls. We were talking last time about God's call to Moses, and I made what I think should have been heard as an audacious conclusion, that the way God called Moses has parallels in the way he calls everybody. And if you didn't hear it, let me say it. I think he calls everybody. Everyone gets a call. Some respond, some don't. Sometimes it's dramatic, as it was for Moses. Sometimes it's less dramatic, but the pieces are still the same. What were the pieces? Let's just review very quickly. If you weren't here, scribble as fast as you can. What's the first step in God's call? He gets your attention. He used a burning bush with Moses. He'll use something else with you. What's the second thing? He leads you to worship. As Moses came close, God says, "That's close enough. Take off your shoes." And the next thing you know, Moses' face is to the ground. What's the third thing? He reveals needs in the world. Sometimes, as with Moses, needs that you're already fully aware of. And he begins to say, "It's time. Something's going to happen. We're going to deal with this." And your heart is going to leap with joy, thinking, "Good, you're finally getting around to doing something. Took you long enough." And then step four comes, which is God calls you to be the instrument through which that need is addressed or that concern is addressed. But the process doesn't end there. Step five may be as important as any of the others. What was step five?
Step five
He begins to equip you. And that equipping takes what form?
People around you.
Starts with God's presence. It continues with God's power being manifest in you. Things begin to happen in and through you that could not happen with God's presence, with God's power not present. And then, and thank you, Gene, and then he begins to put people alongside of you. Who was the person that he put alongside Moses?
Aaron.
And I asked you last week, why did the bush burn that day? When you come to the end of this little piece, you hear God say, look, there's your brother Aaron coming to meet you. And they probably had not seen each other in 40 years. I think Moses would have known that Aaron was coming. But I don't even know that for sure. I'd like you to turn, before we get too far started, I'd like you to turn to chapter 4, verse 27. Way after all of this is done, way after Moses is already on the road back to Egypt with Aaron with him, verse 27 comes. And if you're not careful, you may say, what is this doing here? This is out of order. And I'd like you to have the sense that this is out of order. What does verse 27, chapter 4 of Exodus, what does it say? God spoke to Aaron. And what did he say to Aaron? Go into the desert and meet Moses. And what did Aaron do? He went and met Moses. The meeting is earlier in the chapter. So what's this? You can't make movies 3,000 years ago, but you can tell a story. The storyteller is saying, while all this is happening with Moses, and you see at the end of this powerful time with Moses, here comes Aaron, the Bible steps back and says, here's why Aaron was there. It's because God spoke to him and sent him. The dangers of trying to be a slave and leave where you're supposed to be as a slave, all those dangers Aaron had faced. God speaking to the two of them, and he brings them together at the right time. Now, what I want to do is I want to walk through a little bit Moses' reaction to all of this. Moses' reaction was what? More than one part to it, but you can summarize it. What was Moses' reaction to this? That point four, God calls you. God calls Moses to do this. What was his reaction? He starts with excuses. And what were the excuses? I'd like to see if you can get them in order. One, two, three, four. And then there is a spectacular five. What's excuse one? You've read this, right? Up through chapter 19, right? Or at least up to chapter 18, ready for chapter 19, right? Not number one. Not number one. What's the first thing he says?
He had a stuttering problem.
Yes, he did, but that's not the first thing he pointed out. Verse 11 of chapter 3. You can read it about four different ways. Who am I to do such a job? Why me? Who am I? Answer, I am a marker that is outlived its usefulness. Why me? What would have been the reason that Moses would have said that? Because 40 years before, he saw the problem and tried to do something about it, and it almost cost him his life. It certainly cost the life of the Egyptian that he decided to exact his thing on. Let me say something here very carefully. How many Israelites died in the process of getting them out? Millions of people, right? More than a million people. How many of them died in the process of getting them out? None. How many Egyptians died? The firstborn sons, and then the army that wouldn't let it alone. But it wasn't until they refused God over and over and over. God's plan wasn't for people to die. Moses says, why me? I tried that and I failed. I haven't even been there in 40 years. I'm a shepherd now. And you can make the list go on and on. What was the second excuse? And just in case you don't know where to look, it's verse 13. I don't know your name. And I got to tell you, this one is way bigger than it looks. The idea of the name was that you knew something. You had an intimate relationship with someone. Something had been revealed to you, and a basis of a much deeper relationship was established. Think of I got to be careful how I do this. Think of a woman of years meeting a teenager, and the teenager says, "Hey, Dot." And the woman says, "My name is Mrs. Smith." Right? We're not ready for that thing, right? But if one of her great-grandchildren or one of her grandchildren comes up, they don't say Mrs. Smith. What do they say? They pick one of those names that has this tenderness and this connection. Moses is saying, I don't really know much about you. I don't know your name. What's the third one?
Now, will they follow me?
Will they listen? Will they respond? What if they don't believe? What if they don't listen to me? See, if I had a manna, this would be so much better. Does anybody notice a shift between here and here?
Mm-hmm.
And a shift between here and here?
Soft.
Up here it's, not on your life am I going to do that. Down here it is, well, if I even thought about doing that, I couldn't take it. And now, well, okay, let's imagine I got there and I start. He's sort of seeing himself further down the road, right? Now, all of you who are ready for this, what's the fourth one? I'm not a good speaker. Right? That's what you were. Most of you were recognize that. Now, I want to try to spend the morning working through how this comes to us. What was the fifth one? The fifth one is not so much an excuse as much as it is just a plea. And it's verse 13.
Anybody else?
There's one translation that comes up, well, what about your brother Aaron? He's pretty good at speaking. But I don't think that captures it. There's an anger that God gets at some point in there, and it's an anger that's a little hard to understand, and I'm not pretending that I understand it fully. But there's an anger. There comes a point, as God is encouraging you to respond to His call, that it's time to respond to His call. And when Moses says that, that's when God gets angry. I believe it's chapter 4, verse 13, verse 14. And the reason I'm saying this is there's some translations that sound like God is considering replacing Moses with Aaron. I don't think that was in what God was trying to communicate. I think what He was saying was, not only can I control how people speak, I'm the one who created all of that. But He also, I think, says, I'm going to put people alongside of you. And that's sort of the end of the equipping. God's presence, God's power manifested in your life, and God's people to work alongside of you. So, are these our excuses? Are these our excuses when God calls us? Do we know that God is with us? That was God's answer to the first one. Who am I? You're a person that God is with. Why me? You're a person God is with. Do we know that? I don't know your name. Do we know God's name? He's ready to reveal it. Do we understand what was, when God said, "This is my name," what was the first thing he said? I am who I am. If you tried to put that in a negative context, what would it say? I'm not who you sometimes think I am. I'm not who you imagine I am. What do we, as human beings, often imagine God is? About 1,000 answers to that. And if you're sorting through those, a heavenly Santa Claus, a happy granddaddy, an angry jailkeeper, and all sorts of things in between. And God brushes all of that aside. Who I am, he seems to be saying, is more than you will understand. And if you try to contain me, there's a quip that's out there. It's a good quip. It's old. If you've heard it before, forgive me. God made us in his image, and we've spent all the time since trying to return the favor. Trying to make God in our image. Your God is Too Small, I think, was a very famous book back in the day. Do we understand that God is who he is, and we're not going to contain him in our heads? Number two, he gave a second name. What was his second name? I am who I am. And then he said, I am the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. We will say more about that on another day. I don't think we're going to have time to do it this day. But what's he saying by that? He is saying, do you understand that I am who I am and not something that you've conjured up and put in a box to control and contain? And do you understand that you have a heritage of faithful people who've gone before you? People who knew God, people who followed God, people whose acts of faith have made it possible for us to come to faith. Do we understand that? Some of you were at the 8 o'clock service. Some of you heard a message about Jim Pardue. I will not repeat it here. Those of you who haven't been to church yet, listen for that. And when you do, say a prayer for Judy and Kim. We have had faithful people here. And that's by far not the only one. You will be the faithful people for the ones that come behind. So will I. Do we know that? That's part of knowing who God is. I am who I am, and I have been working with faithful people, setting an environment in which you have a chance to know about me. What about number three? What if we do start repeating God's call? What's going to happen then? Are we ready to trust God for the results of what we do? There are missionaries who testify, they go into a place, and hundreds and thousands begin to respond. And there's other missionaries go into a place, and some of you can finish the story better than I. What happens? 10 years, 15 years, and they have one convert or two. And then, 20, 30 years after that, you suddenly find something there. Are we ready to allow God's power to be revealed in us? Do we realize that it could happen that God's power could be revealed in us? How did God reveal his power in Moses? What did he say he was going to do? He took Moses' rod and he ordered Moses to throw it on the ground. Remember that? What happened? Turned into a snake. What did Moses do at that moment? He ran. My translation doesn't say he jumped back. Mine says he ran. I think there's a couple of translations that said he jumped back. Okay. And what did God say? Stop, go back, pick it up, and by the tail. Are you hearing Ken Medema's words echoing a little bit at this moment? We talked about them last week. You don't pick up a snake. And if you do pick up a snake, you don't pick it up by the tail. And when he picked it up by the tail, what happened? Turned back into a rod. He said, do that. Do that. And then he said, do something else. And we haven't talked about this one, but it's in there. You've read this, right? What's the next thing? Take your hand and put it inside. And when he took it out, what was on his hand? Leprosy. When he put it back and took it out, leprosy was gone. Leprosy is one of the most powerful images in the whole of the Old Testament. You cannot cure leprosy. It cannot be done. And yet, in the days that are coming, maybe it'll be 2013, we will talk about the provision God made for the purification of someone who has been cured from leprosy. You can't be cured from leprosy, but there's provisions of what to do when you are. And God said, you can't do that, but I've got the power for this. Do you realize God's power could be demonstrated in you at almost that level? What's your reaction right now? What's in your head right now? I suspect I know what it is, because it's in my head too. No way. No way. God is calling us to believe His power could be manifested in us. I'm not a good speaker. I'm quoting Moses. I want to take you someplace, and I don't want you to look at the larger context, because the larger context has a very different and very, very powerful message. I want you to look at a single verse. Samuel is talking to Saul. Saul is king of Israel. And the verse is 1 Samuel 15:17. 1 Samuel 15:17. I'm going to start with a single verse of context. Saul has been yakking. He has been talking. And verse 16 of 1 Samuel 15, verse 16. Samuel then said to Saul, stop. Meaning, shut up. Let me tell you what the Lord said to me last night. And Saul said, go on. And Samuel said, small as you may be in your own eyes, are you not the leader of the tribes of Israel? Has the Lord not anointed you king of Israel? So here's my question. Moses says, I can't speak so good. What do we say? Maybe not that, but we'll say something like it. Something to play down our abilities. And it's not our abilities. It's God's abilities working through us that matter. And what is God saying to us? Let me tell you what God said last night. God said, small as you may be in your own eyes, are you not a child of God? Do you not have the living Lord living in you? Have you not been anointed to God's work? Because that's essentially what He said to Moses. Some people are overconfident. Some people are underconfident. Both are a problem. This is focused on those who think God cannot use them, or that God cannot use them for this or that task. And God is saying, yes, I can. The most amazing thing in Scripture is when you see somebody saying, God can't use such and so for this or that. And I can remember when it happened in the living room of my house. Somebody was on television, and the question was asked of this person who was a pastor, what would you say if a young woman in your congregation came to you and said, I think God is calling me to be a pastor? My daughter was doing her homework. She was on the floor in front of me. I did not think she was listening to the television. The response was from this pastor, I would tell her she was mistaken. God can't use a woman. God would not want to use a woman as a pastor. And my daughter looked up, bless her heart, and said, who is that old man? I don't know whether God is calling women to be pastors, but from somebody to say He can't or wouldn't, it's wrong.
He's calling them to be missionaries.
He's calling them to be all kinds of things, and God knows if the women weren't doing something, the men would be lost. I'm sorry, but that's the truth. Now, I want to take you two places before I do anything else. I want to let what we've just said stand there a moment. And I want to take you two more places very, very quickly. I want to take you to Romans chapter 15. And immediately, the next book, 1 Corinthians, I want to find 1 Corinthians chapter 10. Paul is writing to the church in Rome. Paul is writing to the church in Corinth. Romans chapter 15, 1 Corinthians chapter 10. And I want to be able to go from one to the other fairly quickly. You ready? Romans chapter 15. 1 Corinthians chapter 10. See somebody near you that's struggling? Give them a hand. We all get better at this with practice. I want you to listen, because the two are saying the same thing in very, very different ways. Romans 15, verse 4. All these things which were written so long ago were written so that. All these things that were written so long ago. That's Exodus. That's Genesis. That's Deuteronomy. That's Isaiah. That's the Psalms. All these things that were written so long ago were written so that we, learning perseverance and the encouragement which the Scriptures give, comma, should have hope. We are not doing a worthless exercise when we go through the Old Testament. We are looking at the place from which encouragement and perseverance can be learned. We see there the things that give us hope. These things that were written so long ago were written so that we, learning perseverance and the encouragement which Scriptures give, should have hope. And I'll move over to 1 Corinthians chapter 10. The focus verse is verse 6, but let me give you a little context. Verse 1, I want you to be quite certain, brothers, that our ancestors all had the cloud over them. They all passed through the sea. In the cloud and in the sea, they were all baptized into Moses. They all ate the same spiritual food. They all drank the same spiritual drink, since they drank from the spiritual rock which followed them, and that rock was Christ. In spite of this, God was not pleased with most of them, and their corpses were scattered over the desert. Verse 6, these things happened as examples. Examples for our benefit, so that we should never set our hearts as they did on evil things. Nor are you to worship false gods as some of them did. Verse 11, all these things happened to them by way of example to us. They were described in writing to be a lesson for us to whom it has fallen to live in the last days of the ages. Everyone, no matter how firmly he thinks he is standing, must be careful lest he fall. And he goes on with some of those powerful words in the Old Testament. Don't ever think that the trials that have come upon you are more than a human being can stand. You can trust that God will not let you be put to the test beyond your strength, but with any trial will provide a way out by enabling you to put up with it. What has been written is for our encouragement, so that we can learn perseverance and realize that we have a hope. And what happened to them and how they responded is a negative example to us. This is what you don't do. And as we get further into this, look at where Moses was. The excuses are what we all do. But in the end, Moses stepped past that and finally said yes. So let me now, I want to focus on this just a little bit more. On the day of his call, Moses was doing what he had done every day for years. And something broke in. Moses noticed it. What was the first question of the morning? What if he hadn't? What if he hadn't? But he did. And what did he ask? You may have not noticed this. When Moses saw the burning bush, he asked a question. He asked it this way. He said, I wonder what that means, that the bush is burning, but it's not burned up. Do we ever ask that question? When God called, Moses said, here I am. When God said, stop, take off your shoes, Moses stopped, took off his shoes, and his face went to the ground. And after all the excuses, he left that place ready to do God's work in a new place, ready to use ordinary things in new ways, ready to work with new people, ready to stand up to new challenges, ready to go wherever God leads him, as long as God goes with him. He went away in a new relationship with God. And he was no longer saying, what am I to do today? He was asking, what is God calling me to do today? There's a guy named Robert Creech. He's now a professor at the Truett School at Baylor. But some years ago, for 20 years or so, he was pastor of a church in Houston. Before that, he was a professor at the school that Barbara and I both attended. Some of his sermons were online for a while. And he asked some very interesting questions in one particular sermon. Here's what he said. Things on the 11 o'clock news, things in the paper, things in the weekly news magazines. Do we ask, what do they mean? Do we lament what is happening, or do we ask, what does it mean? Do we marvel at what takes place in our world, or do we ask, what does it mean? Do we ask, what does it mean that this is happening in our world at this time? So here we go. What does it mean that maps are being redrawn? What does it mean that governments are falling that for years have oppressed their people? What does it mean that things we had trusted are crumbling? What does it mean that the economic foundation of our country and our world is shaking? What does it mean that people in ever-increasing numbers are questioning the meaning of their lives and are seeking answers to questions that seem to them to have no answers? What does it mean that our public moral values, are in a decline that has lasted over 40 years and shows little sign of abating? Let me switch gears. What does it mean to be part of a church in an area in which the population is growing by hundreds or thousands each year? What does it mean to be part of a church that is unlike the average of churches in our nation? What would it mean to be part of a church in which everyone, individually and all of us corporately and collectively, were to encounter God and seek to follow God, to find and do His will, to be a truly loving and caring community? What would it be like? Where is God at work? Can we even imagine what God could bring about in us and through those, to those around us? Do you think God is content that thousands of people within 5 miles of where we are right now have no church family, have no church home, have no understanding of God's word, have no awareness of God's love, no connection with God's Son, and no experience of God's presence? Do you think God is content in any way with that? Do you think He is content that there are those all around us who endure pain and alienation and separation because they don't know how to hold their families together? They don't even know how to engage the resources that God has provided for such things? Is He content with the destructive demons of alcohol, drugs, and violence that seem to dominate the lives of so many? Is He content with the false gods of materialism and pleasure that allure people away from the worship of God and the love of their Creator? Is God ready to say, if we would but listen, their cries, their misery, their oppression has come up to me, and I am coming down to redeem them. I am ready to do something bigger than any of you have ever dreamed of before. Is Bonaire Baptist the place in Richmond where this will happen? Are the people of this church the ones who will hear and respond? Are there others nearby who would join us? Aaron joined Moses so that all that God was ready to do would be done. Should the fear and excuses of Moses be seen for what they are? A all too human reaction that each of us makes to God's call. His revelation is our invitation to participate. Two responses that we could make. One is, oh, I wish he would do things like that here. I think I'll watch, and if he ever does, then I'll join in. But another response is that we step up before we see the results, while it all still hangs in the balance, ready to be obedient to him, sensitive to his leading.
By the tail. Thank you.